What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app. Paranormal Science.
Happy Sunday night, everybody, and welcome to Paranormal Science. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Mark Kies.
And I'm Stan Zirk.
And in case anybody's interested in meteor showers, we are in the midst of a period of meteor showers over the next few nights. I think the 11th is the peak.
I'm going to have to go out and watch tonight.
Yeah, Lauren and I, over the last about week or so, have been going out every few nights and keeping our eyes on the sky. And we were out last night and saw quite a few, and... geez, it was probably 3 or 4 days ago before that, and saw quite a few.
You've got a great location up there, though. It's dark.
Yes, yes.
Too much light pollution where I'm at.
Yeah, it's a little tough the closer to the city you are, but I live out there in the country, and it's nice and dark, but boy, we've had some beautiful skies. So if you're into shooting stars, meteor showers, get out there and take a look. We've been going out about 10 o'clock at night and having, you know, a few meteors every couple minutes. Not bad, but the 11th is supposed to be the peak.
I'll have to check that out.
Well, Stan, you and I had the opportunity to get out and do a little bit of fundraising to help
a couple
of good causes. You and I were out at the Summer Mystic Fair up in Clark Summit, sponsored by Goddess Creations, to benefit the Lackawanna County Women's Resource Center, and that went very well. And,
oh, it was great. It was, what a nice little park, a perfect day. Everything was good.
Yeah. A little bit hot that day, but we had a nice tent.
Stayed
so
in the shed. Stayed
we did
in the
okay.
Shade. We're okay.
Yeah, and last week, you, Joe, was Ed and Kelly there, I believe.
We did a benefit bingo for Lila's Lollies, and that went rather well. Joe was calling the numbers, and the rest of us were just collecting cards and serving food.
Yeah, that's a tough situation for this little girl who has upwards of 30 seizures a day and three surgeries, and she's still...
Yes.
Still being treated, and
yeah.
tough situation for that little girl. So everything we can do to help out, we try to help them out. And they'll be at the East Coast Paracon, I believe, again this year.
They will be selling their lollipops.
Yeah.
Great lollipops.
Indeed. Well, we had tonight's guest on the show several months ago, and he's great. His name is psychic medium William Stillman, and he's the internationally known award-winning author of Autism and the God Connection book trilogy, and that explores the aspects of spiritual giftedness in many people with autism, and it's a really cool collection of books. And I've often said this, even with people who have autism or schizophrenia, that they do have a special connection sometimes, and they have to be looked at at as being opened as mm-hmm. well as having some psychiatric issues. They often go hand in hand there. So it's a really cool trilogy that he wrote there. But he's got a new book out. And this is something that has very quickly become a resource for the PPA, the work that we do. And it's called Under Spiritual Siege, How Ghosts and Demons Affect Us and How to Combat Them. And it's a great book, and we're going to talk to William in just a minute about the book. But I had a opportunity to read it, and it's a phenomenal book, and that's why we've decided to use that as one of our resources for clients. And I'll let him explain a little bit more about the book. But it's you know, something that can be very helpful to our clients for understanding, I think, what they went through in a different way, and giving them some support afterwards, after we do an investigation and a resolution for those people. So Bill works out of the Alta View Wellness Center in the Harrisburg area, and we have him right here tonight by phone. Hi, William.
Welcome, William.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Stan. I'm delighted to be back on your program and looking forward to having an interesting conversation.
And William, you know, I'm so glad that you came back on the show. And this is a book that I absolutely love, as I just commented, that I liked it so much that I've decided to use it as a resource for our team. And it's very easy to read. It explains eloquently what people go through, sometimes how they get themselves in their own mess, kind of how to change your life to do it. And we'll let you you know, explain a little bit more. But first, for the listeners who hadn't heard of you before, can you give us just a little bit of your background? When did you become aware that you were spiritually gifted, and at what point did you decide that you were going to use that professionally to help people?
Well, first of all, let me say thank you. I'm humbled and flattered by your very gracious and generous comments about the book.
You're welcome.
I think that we are all spiritually gifted, and the neat thing about being human is that it's going to manifest differently in you than it does in me, because it's being filtered through a channel that is uniquely Mark or uniquely Stan instead of Bill. And so our spiritual giftedness is as individualized and unique as our DNA makeup. So let me state that. I am nothing and no one special. In fact, I actually didn't begin to do work as a psychic medium professionally until I was in my early 40s, and I'm well into my 50s now. And so I'm living proof that it is never too late to begin to explore that aspect of your personhood. Although, as a very young child, I had a number of highly unusual things happen to me, and some of it wasn't very nice, quite frankly. And I think a lot of that became quite blocked up for a very long time. But once I made the commitment to reclaim the sensitivity that I know I experienced as a child, it all came flooding back very quickly, and I made up for decades in about 3 months' time. And that's when I began to do the psychic work.
And one thing that I would like to add, you're not somebody who just wrote the book off of, you know, what you had heard or read from other people. You actually went through a very dark time of your life and lived a lot of the things that you are writing about, and were able to pull yourself out of that, correct?
That is correct, yes. And I can certainly expand upon that if you wish. But I wanted to write a book that would be a very fundamental primer or guidebook for people who are maybe susceptible to a lot of misguided or faulty information that they're gleaning from horror films or from YouTube videos or from very sensationalized television programming that is actually feeding or exacerbating the situation that they're in and making it worse. So I wanted to lay that out for them and to explain what it is, and then to empower them with the authority so that there is less of a dependency upon calling in the Ghostbusters, as it were, as opposed to really taking responsibility and taking charge for the situation that they're encountering.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I often talk about with a lot of people, and a lot of people don't realize that they ultimately have control over their destiny, and quite often I think feel that they need someone outside of themselves to come in and rescue them from a ghost or, you know, a negative entity or whatever they think they may have there, when they don't realize all they need is some tools, and quite often life changes. But that's one of the reasons I really like the book, is because a lot of our clients, when they call, they do have either themselves or other family members in the house that are going through a really difficult time and dipped into some dark areas of their lives, and have often connected with some lower vibrational entities, if you will, earthbound spirits or something negative, and now they don't know what to do with it. And let me ask this: when we get requests for help, often we can get to some people fairly quickly, but other times it may be several months before we can get there. For those people who may be waiting for help, they often ask, "What can I do prior to you coming while I'm waiting?" Are there anything, any practices or visualizations or life changes that people could get into to maybe ease their situation a little bit?
Well, I think what I could recommend is the beginnings of an analysis or an assessment process. The first thing that I would recommend to those folks is, under no circumstances should you take it upon yourself to attempt to engage with whatever it is that you believe you're experiencing. I have encountered too many people who are trying to do their own investigation, and they're calling out, or they're confronting, or they're trying to record either on audio or video this phenomena, and honestly, they're the last people that should be doing that, because they're right in the epicenter of all of the activity. And my concern is, a lot of times, particularly when we're talking about not a haunting by a ghost but demonic activity, there's a lot of mental health issues that come to bear oftentimes in situations like that. When I have gone in to investigate what I have determined to be a demonic activity type situation, there has always been addiction or abuse in the household. And so I think that, number one, don't attempt to engage with anything. Number two, really begin to take a careful assessment of your lifestyle and that of the other people that live in the household, because it's like a dog that chases its tail. One thing feeds directly into the other, and these negative energies, you know, the ghosts we can deal with because they're more egocentric, and they sort of have their own agenda of, you know, they either want help or they want to be left alone, and they're trying to drive people out, and, you know, they're making a lot of noise, and because they have been human, you can rationalize with them oftentimes. But the demons are, they're another animal totally, and they're oftentimes very vicious, very cunning and deceptive, very duplicitous. They will masquerade as something they are not, and so sometimes people believe that they're interacting with their deceased father, or, you know, the little girl that died in that house years ago, when in fact it is a demon. And the demons want to cause people to become undone. They want to create upset and distress, and they thrive upon chaos and anxiety. So if there is addiction in the household, whether it's nicotine, alcohol, marijuana, pornography, gambling, binge eating, they will try to escalate that. Ultimately, what they want is to set the stage for a murder-suicide type of situation to occur. And so I think that, you know, even just that very basic knowledge is going to help people to be conscious and aware of what it is they're up against.
All right, and I have a few follow-up questions to that, but we're up against a commercial, so we're going to take our first commercial break and ask you to hold on. You're listening to WILK's Paranormal Science. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Mark Kies from Paranormal Science. Did you ever get that feeling like you have a thousand demons tearing at your back? You know the pain. Are you uncomfortable in your own body, like you're possessed with somebody else's torment and suffering? You don't need an exorcist. You need chiropractics. Dedicated to providing the best chiropractic and rehabilitative care possible, Chiropractics will get you back into the body you remember. Chiropractics, 569 Pier Street, Kingston, PA. Check them out on the web, getchiropractics.com, T-I-X on the end, or call 570-288-5800 and get back to living.
Well, hi there, it's Elmer here. The East Coast Paracon is only 47 days away. Stadenhock asked me to remind you of that. Don't know why they can't do that themselves, so here goes. The East Coast Paracon will be at the Marketplace of Steamtown. That's in Scranton, September 24th. Starts when the mile opens and ends when they close. If you need more info, go to www.eastcoastparacon.com. That's a long one. Almost forgot. Those guys knock $2 off the ticket price if you buy them on the website. Talk to you soon.
Welcome back. You're listening to Paranormal Science on WILK. Tonight we're talking with psychic William Stillman about his new book, Under Spiritual Siege, How Ghosts and Demons Affect Us and How to Combat Them. William, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, just before the break, we were speaking a little bit about how demons ultimately want to try a murder-suicide type of scenario with their victims that they latch onto. And, it's interesting that you say that because, when we're talking with a lot of people, a lot of people, when we talk about ghosts, are afraid that they're going to get killed. I think that's one of the top things, or their other kids are going to be harmed. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't think anybody's been physically murdered by a ghost. But this is one of the things we often say. They can sort of manipulate your emotions and take you a deep, dark place that can often lead to suicidal and homicidal thoughts. And you seem to be backing that up.
More so with the demonic activity as opposed to the ghost.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to.
Oh, yes, thank you. The ghost, I have seen people actually be, demons. I've actually seen people bitten, oftentimes when they're scratched. They're scratched in consecutive strikes of three to mock the Holy Trinity. There is a lot of harm. Probably the most insidious thing that demons will do is they will communicate telepathically to impress within very vulnerable people harmful thoughts. So it would be a voice that you would hear other than the voice that you would use to talk yourself through something, telling you very deprecating, negative, harmful thoughts. If you do the research and you look at people who have, for example, killed their own children, or teenagers who have wiped out their entire family, oftentimes they will say, I heard voices telling me to do it, or I've been hearing these voices for a long time, and it escalated to this point.
Bill, earlier you said that a demon can imitate a loved one, a father, a mother, grandmother, a small girl, and how do you know in the beginning whether it's a demon or a spirit? And at what point, like, once they seem to draw you in, do you know what's happening? Do you realize it, or do they just keep taking in deeper, and by the time you do realize it, it's too late?
Well, I don't know that I am aware of a situation where a ghost has been able to present itself as another form other than mirroring the person he or she had been. The thing about the demons is because they are imperfect and inauthentic, they may attempt to replicate or masquerade as a loved one that we have known, but they will always get something wrong. There will always be something off about the presentation. They will get the eye color of the person wrong. They will get the clothing wrong. They'll get the gait of the person wrong. They might get the voice wrong or say something that you know that person would never say. So in my opinion, it's not that challenging to trip them up in that respect.
Now, that kind of answers a question that I was going to ask. If someone moves into a house and they see an apparition maybe that they don't know who it is, it's not connected to them in any way, is there a way to tell a difference initially for the novice person between a ghost and a demon? Because, you know, as an example, we've gone into some homes where there's been some very, very violent activity caused by human-based spirits that would definitely look like a demonic presence was there, but it was just a really nasty human, you know, in ghost form. But is there any kind of way to tell the difference there just by a novice person trying to figure it out?
Mm-hmm. You know, what's really interesting is that a lot of times the children in the household are the most deeply affected because they are so sensitive and so vulnerable. And in every situation where there has been a demonic activity that I have investigated where there have been children involved and the children have witnessed something, they all report red eyes, seeing some figure with red eyes. There also tends to be just a very overwhelming, heavy feeling of evil in the atmosphere, in the environment, oftentimes accompanied by a very noxious odor or very unpleasant odor that you would associate with sewage or death or dying. So those are, you know, a couple of the symptoms. And there are more, of course, in the book. And I've, you know, certainly had my run-ins with something that tried to recruit me as a very young person. So in hindsight, I'm actually grateful that that happened because it allows me to recognize what it is that I'm dealing with.
Now you mentioned some factors in our lives that would attract demons, negative entities towards this or towards us. I'm kind of wondering, are there locations that demons could inhabit that may have been pulled there by other people that remain there after those people leave? Let's say it's a home and, you know, the first family leaves, the second family moves in. Can a place be sort of inhabited by a demon, or is that more with a person than a location, or could it be both?
Well, I think it's an interesting question, and I certainly, you know, as you're asking the question, I'm thinking about the Amityville Horror House, and I'm thinking about, you know, the alleged demonic activity that occurred there, and how that seemed very strongly connected to Ronald DeFeo and his downward spiral, and the tragedy that occurred there, and then how that negative energy seemed to linger there. So I think it is entirely possible, particularly if there was abuse and or addiction in that household.
So on some,
I mean, have you found that to be true in your investigations?
Yeah, I think especially where you have a location where people are focusing on that, that's the intent to try to connect with them, and it becomes like, let's say there's a satanic altar, and we've had a home like that before where a man was married to a woman whose daughter and his wife practiced satanic rituals in the home, even to the point they had a big pentagram under a bed on the second floor. And he was divorced and remarried, and years later, the new wife was being severely attacked by whatever was still there. So,
sure.
You know, he claims he was not involved in any of that, and that was part of why he got divorced. He wanted to get away from that. But whatever they seemed to pull in seemed to have remained there and was attacking someone new. But also, I've heard a lot of people, you know, refer to him as, you know, these are that person's own particular demons, and wherever they go, it seems to go. And you check back at the last residence, and they have nothing going on there. So, you know, to me, it almost seems to be both. It could follow someone and is directly related to just that person, or it could stay manifest in a home where it was called to.
I think that I would agree with that. I think that there are probably no rules. I think that there's nothing standardized about what we do. That it's probably very highly individualized, depending upon the environment, depending upon the chemistry of the individuals in the environment, and the type and degree of power of the energy that they're dealing with. You know, I mean, I have gone into places where I have seen quote-unquote imps just scatter to the four corners of the room when I walk in, because they know who I'm there representing. I equate them more like the nuisance of a gnat or a mosquito, as opposed to having cleared a very old house and being in the basement in a prayer circle with my back to a dirt room that was not lit, and feeling something absolutely monstrous in size rising up behind me. So I think it runs the gamut.
Yeah, that's kind of the uncomfortable feeling nobody wants to have, even going out investigating. But I'm not sure how to pose this question here, but let me ask it to you this way. Are there cases, or do you believe that people can make changes in their life which would spontaneously cause demons to go away, or does it take some sort of outside assistance to do that?
Well, I believe I'm probably living proof of that. So absolutely, I believe that if you invest time and effort, and I'd like to think I've laid this out for folks in the book. Also, if you've invested time and effort into becoming an improved version of your old self, that you are manifesting with greater authenticity the truth of your personhood, and you begin to do what you are, then you create less and less room for any negative energy to have you on tenterhooks, so to speak, and that becomes replaced by positive energy that begins to fill a spiritual reserve within yourself. Yeah. So it's like putting money in the bank that you can draw against when you're feeling weak or when you're feeling vulnerable.
And I think it was laid out in the book pretty good. And, you know, one way that I often think about that is in when talking with people, kind of, you know, say it in these terms, where, you know, there would be a negative energy attached or attracted to you for a particular reason, whatever that is, that, you know, you open the door, or just, you know, you have a low vibration at that time. But if you make these life changes and you are able to raise your own personal vibration, you know, negative stuff doesn't like that good feeling vibration. It doesn't like the light and higher frequencies, and would probably like, you know, a bright light, push it back. It doesn't like that feeling and would often go away. And I mean, that might be the simplistic terms of looking at it, but that's kind of how I've explained it before.
Mm-hmm. I think that we also need to recognize that in my opinion and in my experience, that there is a direct correlation between mental illness and people who are under spiritual siege.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I will absolutely say, and we get this question all the time, and you know, I apologize for putting it in these terms, but this is how the question comes in. People will say, you guys get a lot of requests. What do you do with the crazy people? How do you know, they're not just crazy? Well, I can tell you firsthand that people who do have some kind of emotional, psychological disorders can sometimes pull in the worst things, and we've seen it firsthand, and we had two people on our team that were attacked during one of these cases, and they're very tough cases to work because there is a psychological and emotional issue that also needs to be taken care of, as well as the spiritual issue that you're dealing with. But do you care to elaborate a little bit more on that?
Well, I've worked on the periphery of the mental health field for almost 30 years now, I recognize symptomology. I know diagnoses, and I think that, even in its most subtle form, you know, depression can be a dangerous place to be. I've been there, done that. In my darkest hour, I came just inches from slashing my own wrists as a teenager during the time that I was enduring some pretty awful stuff. So I know of what I speak. And again, that's been a useful tool to me in recognizing it in other people. But, you know, the initiative for change here has got to come from within. It is not acceptable for folks to play the victim card, and it's not acceptable for folks to have a dependency on a third party to come in and make it all better for them. Because as we've seen time and time again, you know, folks will call a rabbi or a priest or a shaman or, you know, a neighbor who knows about these things to come in to clear the house for them, and things are fine for a week or two, and then it's right back where it started. So my protocol when I go in to do this work is, you're going to be present, and you're going to be an active participant in the house clearing because you live here. I don't. It is your home.
And I'm so glad you said that because, you know, out of hundreds of cases over and over again, that's what we find a lot of times. People don't want to invest a whole lot of effort on their own part and just want the quick fix. They want somebody to come in and get rid of stuff. Sometimes it can be done that way. Other times it could take, you know, months or even years to get the activity to completely stop. And it's a lot of, you know, it's a big investment on the part of the victim to really put forth the effort to change themselves as well and help the situation. But William, I'm going to ask you to hang on. We have to take another commercial break. But when we come back, I want to flip the table a little bit and talk about the light side, because not all ghosts are bad. So let's talk about them a little bit too. So hang out with us here. You're listening to Paranormal Science on WILK. We'll be right back.
Hello there, Elmer here. Sandra, the lady from Fashion Hunts magazine, told me she still needs a few more girls for this fashion show. If you're a girl between 18 and 24 years old, this is your chance. Go to our website for information on how to contact her. www.eastcoastparacon.com. The fashion show will be at the East Coast Paracon and is free to the public at 1 o'clock on the mall stage. Seems to be if you're under 18 or over 24 or not a girl, you're not going to walk on that stage. Guess you'll have to sit in with me, Joe, and Stan in the audience. See you soon.
Warning. This program may contain material that is controversial to some listeners. Spontaneous enlightenment may occur.
And welcome back. You're listening to Paranormal Science on WILK, and we're speaking with psychic William Stillman about his new book, Under Spiritual Siege, How Ghosts and Demons Affect Us and How to Combat Them. William, where could people go to find your book and learn a little bit more about it?
I think that your favorite bookstore should have it. I know that on Amazon.com right now, it's a little over $13, and it's a hardcover book. I think, you know, the typical resources that people would go to for their reading material.
And it's a beautiful cover. I've actually posted it on our Paranormal Science Facebook page, so you could jump on there and take a look. And we did a case on Friday night where the client was going out Saturday to look for your book in the bookstore. If not, she was jumping on Amazon. So we got somebody checking it out already. But like I said, it's a wonderful book for anybody, but especially those people who are going through something or have just recently gone through something, how to proceed after a case.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. I think we need to be really clear here that we're talking about recruitment for an agenda of destruction. And what I really wanted to lay forth in this book was a sense of empowerment that, yes, you can reclaim control of your life and your family and your living environment.
Absolutely. And again, it's a whole team effort. And, you know, we've said this to families before, too. You know, if you have one person there undermining what everybody else is trying to do, that could cause problems as well. So, you know, we recommend the whole family jumping in and helping out when there's a situation like this, especially a negative situation. You know,
yes, I don't want to sound pessimistic about anything because I'm sure you've experienced this as well. In the instances where people do commit and they do follow through on the advisements that you give them, it gets better.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd like to jump a little bit to a more positive side of the paranormal, dealing with spirit guides and angels. And let's say someone wants to start to connect with a spirit guide or an angel. What are the first steps that they should take to go in that direction?
Yes. I don't have a lot of experience with angels, to be honest with you. I don't know a whole lot about them. I don't see them very often when I'm doing readings for clients. When I do see them, they appear to me as an enormous column of golden light, a dead center directly behind someone. To connect with a spirit guide, I think first you need to be of sound mind and body, to be honest with you. I think that you really need to be at a point in your life where you feel that you are well and that you're physical, mental, and spiritual hygiene is optimal. And the reason why I'm stressing that is because otherwise, if you don't go about this properly, in my opinion, you run the risk of, again, something negative seizing advantage of this and swooping in and masquerading as something that it's not. And this has happened to people before. So I put that precaution out there. Otherwise, you know, it's sort of like using a Ouija board. And, you know, you're going to get what you get, and not everything that you get is authentic. But there is a protocol that I do put forth for readers in the book about how to engage with your spirit guide. For those who are unaware, a spirit guide is a formerly human soul, most often not known to us in this lifetime, that has been assigned to us prior to our incarnating in this lifetime. We all have at least one, and the spirit guide is an ambassador on behalf of all that is right and true and good and kind that desires to be our spiritual ally, to impress inspiration within us, to direct our attention to the people and opportunities that will advance us and to keep us on the straight and narrow path, sort of like a glorified Jiminy Cricket.
And so everybody has a spirit guide, whether they know it or not, even though some people might think they have the worst lot in life right now, they're still there with us, and they're there to offer guidance?
Yes, but in my experience, like angels, the spirit guides will not be intrusive except in instances of dire emergency.
Now, you talk about this a little bit in your book, and I'm curious. You do gallery-style readings, and you also you know, meet with a lot of people and do readings in person. So sometimes you may connect with a ghost during these readings, but typically you would pull through what most people are familiar with in a gallery reading. You connect with deceased loved ones who have crossed over properly. Can you tell right away if it's a ghost you're dealing with or someone who's come through who's crossed over properly?
Yes. Yes, immediately. And the reason why I can say that is because a loving presence will only ever be a loving presence. So what that means is, in the example you gave, a deceased loved one that has passed on and is successfully transitioned and they are in the heavenly realm where they should be, would never, for example, curse in anger. They might curse in a playful or joking manner as an indicator of their personality, to validate that's part of their personality. But they're not going to curse and swear in anger or condemnation. The loved ones who are where they should be will have loving messages. I mean, just exactly what you would expect. You know, thank you for all that you've done for me. Don't worry about disposing of my possessions. It's not a big deal. Remember the time when this happened. Those kinds of things. In the times that I've had a ghost come through, and I do allow for it because I have great compassion for them, actually, they've had a very specific, highly personal, egocentric agenda.
Yeah, and you know, I often tell people about ghosts. They've stayed around because of some kind of emotional trauma or psychological issue, or there's always something that holds them here. And you know, this I gather a lot of this through working with psychic mediums. That's who give me the info. But I've got a background in psychology and watch people. That's sort of my job as well. I watch people and I listen. And you know, they've all got some type of problem. And most mediums I've worked with believe that. You know, even when you die, you still have free will, and something keeps them here. And there's usually something that they, you know, a lot of people say it's unresolved issues or whatever, but it may be, you know, all kinds of issues, not necessarily unresolved. But and I appreciate the fact that you feel very compassionately towards, you know, these lost souls because they do need help. But is it sometimes difficult to deal with them?
You know, I've usually been able to wear them down because, as I said earlier, they have been human or they believe they are still human, and so you can rationalize with them. There's just a way that you have to go about it where ideally they come around to understanding it themselves, and they arrive at that realization that, hey, there's a reason why I've lost track of time. There's a reason why I can't remember having used the bathroom in a long time or eaten the meal in a long time, or no one seems to be able to hear me. And it's just a matter of helping them to connect the dots. Ultimately, that's the best case scenario.
Yeah, that's one of the things that comes to mind where you said, why can't they hear me? Is there a certain amount of confusion when, say, they used to live in a home that they died and now they still inhabit that same home, but a new family moves in there, and are they sort of just living in their own space? Like, the way I often put it is, if you're going through a really crazy, vivid dream, and let's say you're in a flying car, you're not questioning that during the dream, but you wake up. And you're like, wow, that was really crazy. Do people get locked into that kind of mindset when they
die?
Well,
you know, when I was reclaiming my personal spiritual gifts and talents, I was working very closely with a spirit guide, and I was being mentored or tutored in what felt like almost nightly dreams. And one of the opportunities that was extremely vivid that I was presented with in the context of a dream was I was given the chance to feel what it was to be a ghost. And that was extremely useful as a learning and teaching tool for me. What I can tell you is that it is so close to being human. It is just one degree shy of being human, and yet with the caveat of you you lose track of time. There's sort of a gray haze around you. You can be where you want to be just by thinking of it, because it's a mental state of being and not a physical state of being. And as we said previously, it is not without being able to assist and support and facilitating a process of proper transition.
Bill, a lot of psychics, I understand that when they go into a home, well, you just mentioned like the spirits, they try to communicate, nobody hears them. But when a psychic comes in there, it's like, are all these spirits drawn to that person because now they realize there's somebody that can hear me? And I hear from different psychics, sometimes they're overwhelmed. For instance, they go to Gettysburg. They just, you know, everything comes at them all at once. Is this like, are you like a lightning rod attracting spirits?
Well, I am not turned on 24/7, and I don't think anyone who does this work should be, because I think that it would be really detrimental to your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being. So when I do my work, I in advance deliberately enter into a prep time for about an hour in advance. But to answer your question, Stan, there have been occasions when I have been doing gallery-type readings where there's a room full of people, and someone will come through to communicate to someone in the audience who doesn't have a direct connection with their loved ones, but knows how to connect with their loved ones. For example, and this is actually in one of my YouTube videos. I was doing a gallery in the Allentown area, and a little fellow with autism came through and was talking to a family in the room who had a son with autism, but this little kid had been in the car with me on the drive up, and he wanted them to get a message to his parents, and they had those connections, so it was really fascinating.
Now, since you brought up autism, it reminds me of we've had three cases over the course of, I don't know, the last 5 years, where parents with very low-functioning autistic kids would be in one room, and they have claimed that they've actually seen the child in a different room, and when they go to look, the child is still there, in one instance playing a video game like he does every day. Are there instances, or would that be something more of a demon or like a projection from the autistic child?
Yeah, I don't know that we have time to get into it here and now, but I do talk about that in one of my Autism and the God Connection books, about the concept of bilocation and how that is not unusual in some instances.
Yeah, and you know, Virginia, the medium that we had out on these cases, said exactly that. It was that person projecting himself out of body, and that's what the person was seeing. But that's three times in a matter of, like I said, about 5 years that we've had cases like that. But some very interesting reading there too, with the autistic kids, and the schizophrenia is just a marvel to me as well, and how connected some of them can be spiritually.
Yeah, I think it's important though to make the distinction that autism is not a mental health disorder.
It's a
neurological difference.
And quite a marvel in itself. And William, the music's playing, which means we're out of time, unfortunately. I had so many more questions, but it's always a pleasure speaking with you. And thank you so much for coming on the show with us tonight.
It was a great pleasure. Thanks, fellas.
So the book is Under Spiritual Siege, How Ghosts and Demons Affect Us and How to Combat Them. Check it out on Amazon, and you can check out William Stillman on his page. I think it's williamstillman.com. So that's it for us tonight. I'm Mark Kies.
And I'm Stan Zurich.
Have a good night.
And sleep tight.